All right, welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for people who play with needles. And our guest this week is a needle player and painter and designer, Amy Poor. Amy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing okay. Doing okay. Amy is a poor, and it's P-O-O-R-E, a poor girl paints needlepoint design.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Very simple, very straightforward. If you can't figure it out, we can't help you.
Mm-hmm. No, like you said, I do believe it's pretty straightforward.
Yep.
So, and you were just saying before how people often will spell it lots of different ways.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it can be, you know, poor as in not rich, but poor. It can be poor spelled correctly with an E, or sometimes I've seen it also as in pour a drink. And I do believe that can be fitting for me as well, because I do like my drink occasionally. So it's kind of funny to see. But my husband's had the same way his whole life. It's always been spelled wrong. So I'm pretty used to it.
Yeah. Interesting when you inherit names like that, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, you just find ways to, like, explain it to them. Or, like, it's like more, but with a P. And then when they try to say it, I'm like, you know, the same thing as poor as in not rich. And they're like, oh, because they'll say it poor and this and that. It's funny. I think it's pretty simple, but lots of people obviously have some issues with it. But, you know, it's okay. Yep. My maiden name's even worse. I mean, it was Blevins, and nobody could spell that. So I actually think I moved up in the world with poor.
Yeah, my wife went from Flockenseer to Parr.
Oh, so, wow. Yeah. That's a lot easier.
Yeah, she was okay with the whole thing, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I contemplated, do I take Blevins as my middle name, or do I keep Elizabeth? And I went with Blevins just for legal reasons, but sometimes I think it would have been easier just to keep Elizabeth. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, interesting here, most people that we talk to have been doing needlework of one kind or another forever. And you are a recent convert, or maybe a convict. I don't know. Convert.
Podcast just got really weird.
Yeah, we can leave convict off my resume.
Okay. All right. We'll do that. How does this happen? Because this is different.
Well, you know, probably when I was around 10, 11, my mom, you know, taught me how to cross stitch. She had cross stitched, you know, her whole life and sewed and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, fiddled around with needlework early and kind of on and off throughout my life, I guess, picked it up some, but I had not done it in a while. And so I met a lady, in my previous life, I did nails for 12 years. And it was like the same people, you know, weekly that I would see appointments. And I met a good friend now, Barbara. She's basically like a second mom to me, and she was an avid needle pointer. And she would, you know, show me things she was working on and talk about it, and I would hear about classes and retreats. And, you know, it all just seemed fabulous, but at the time working, I just didn't have time for it. So after I was married and went right after I'd had my little girl who's 4 now, I had the time to pick it up. So Barbara introduced me to it. She kind of got me going with it. So that's how it initially started. And it's just been, I don't know if it's uphill or downhill ever since. But and my husband was also like, you need to find a hobby, because he likes to build models, like really small, like World War II tanks and airplanes, and he has a hobby. And he's like, you need a hobby. And I'm like, okay. And he regrets those words now. He was like, when I said a hobby, I did not mean, like, you know, take out a mortgage on our house. But, you know, so I just jumped in head first.
Just how it goes.
It's how it goes. And anytime he, like, kind of gives me a cross look, I said, you said find a hobby. So, and he just touches, so, like a good husband does.
Yeah, you have the ultimate shutdown there, don't you? Yeah, he can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was definitely, he led me in that direction, and I just went for it. So.
Yep.
So that's how I got started, and I really just honestly, ever since, I've just, as I've said, the bug bit me pretty hard, and I just fell in love with it.
So this mentor person, straight needlepoint that she did?
Yes. I mean, she, like, you know, just typical ornaments. I think she's done like 21 stockings. I mean, she is an avid needlepointer. And not just, you know, and she does lots of basket weave, but she also does the fancy stitches, takes lots of classes. And so she does a little of both. So she kind of opened my eyes to, like, really how much it can, you know, it's not just, you know, basket weave. It's totally grown over the years.
So that's good. So you got a little picture not only of the craft itself, but the social side as well.
Oh, yeah. I love the social aspect of it. I love a class. I love a retreat. And I mean, I've just had a blast with it. I really have.
That, you know, when you say somebody's done that many stockings, you know, to most people, it's like, oh, that's nice. Until you do two or three stockings. And then...
And then you're like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's, you know, I think, you know, a lot of with my friends that I've, you know, they're kind of like, you're doing what? And, you know, I try to explain it to them and stuff. You know, they just really do not get it until, like you said, they've actually attempted themselves or done a little. And then they kind of are like me, and I'm in total awe of Barbara. I mean, what she's done is just amazing.
Now, is there a local guild or club around you?
No, you know, there might be. I think there's one in Birmingham, but I'm not a member of that. And we used to have a small shop here in town that I would go to, but it has since closed. So I don't really have anything locally. I usually have to travel to most anything that I do.
That's hard.
Okay, Amy, yeah, meet Christine. Lucky. Christine has nothing going on around her, too.
Oh, that's a shame. Where are you? I'm sorry.
I'm in New York on Long Island, where you would think, you know, everyone imagines that we have everything here, and
yeah,
we do not.
Well, I mean, that's the sad thing about it, and that's kind of been my little, well, you know, when a lot of people ask me, you know, I want to bring needlepoint to the next generation, because sadly I seem to be seeing stores close, you know, and not open. And we're very lucky here in Alabama to have two fabulous stores, one in Montgomery and one in Birmingham. And I just could not imagine not having something I could actually get in the car and get to within an hour or so. And so many people don't. And that to me is just a shame. And so that would be sad for me. And like, if we ever had to move, I would have to stipulate to my husband, you cannot find a job anywhere that doesn't have a needlepoint shop within 100 miles. And he knows I'm serious too. So.
Map of the country with pins all over it. This is where we can live. Deal with it.
With circles around them.
Like, we're okay here. We're okay here. Not here though, but yeah. But it's the truth. I mean, I just can't imagine having to do most of my shopping online, because like with the fibers and the threads, and I'm sorry, there is not a picture that can replicate color on a computer as much as seeing it, you know, with your own two eyes.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah.
And yeah, the texture. I mean, the texture is huge, too.
Yeah.
You cannot show that on a computer picture.
No. So true. Yeah. Well, we've talked many times about how the picture on the package of a charted design or any of them, and then when you actually lay out the threads and put it on the canvas you're going to stitch it on, it's, oh, that's what it's going to look like. It's just.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah. It's totally different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You are correct.
So you get started doing needlepoint. Did you do charted stuff first, painted canvas, a mix? How did you get?
Just paint.
Once you got addicted.
Painted canvases. Yeah, I mean, I started on paint, like the first, like, well, I guess I would say the first canvas I actually bought was a small little ornament when I was pregnant. Now, I did not stitch it till later, but it said baby. It was a little Kathy Schenkel ornament that said baby. So it was nice and small and tiny and doable. As I said, it didn't get stitched till later, but the first thing that I actually started stitching was a stocking. And so it was painted. I've never done charted.
way to start on the low end. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I know. I was like, well, you know, I wanted a stocking. So I'm like, I'm going to get a stocking, but it's all basket weave. So, I mean, I started that way. I started with basket weave, and the funny thing is I did not finish that stocking until like probably about 4 months ago, because I got so distracted by so many other projects along the way. this is the first year it's hanging up, even though I've had the canvas for nearly 4 years. So I'm excited about that.
Gary still has the record for the 22-year canvas
30,
stocking.
30.
30?
Oh, yeah. Wow. 30 year. Yeah, got me beat on that one, that's for sure. Yeah. Although my husband's, so it's not even on bars yet, so I need to get going.
Yeah, he'll be watching on that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, he's like, where's mine? But he does have a belt, so he can't complain too much. He gets a lot more use out of the belt than he would the stocking. So.
Okay, talk to me about those belts. I see a lot of people doing belts.
Oh, belts are huge, especially probably in the South.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's
like,
just not. I don't see that around here. So
no, New York either.
Yeah, it's a Southern thing. You know, kind of how we monogram everything down here. Well, that's just another form of putting your mark on something. And you know, most of the belts are monogrammed. Like, you know, my husband's initials are on them, and the second one I'm working on has his initials. So I think it kind of goes along with that mentality down here. Hmm. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah. Cause, you know, because they're kind of like, you know, and they're also personalized. You know, a lot of them have to do with something you're, you know, you're like my husband's bourbon bottles and bourbon barrels, because he's a big bourbon guy. And so that's kind of like his personality and his thing. So it's real personalized, and we like that down here.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, and, you know, and also another big thing are like keychains and, I don't, you know, I'm sure you've seen the Smathers and Branson. That's a, you know, that's a new, all the college kids, they mainly order and buy theirs like that, the pre-made ones. But it's funny how many college kids down here have those belts and wallets and keychains and koozies. So it is, I mean, so it's kind of funny where you're seeing it. You wouldn't think so, but it's out there.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you do a belt, is that's just a long strip of canvas with a design painted on it, or is it geometrics, or it doesn't matter?
It's mainly, I mean, it can be all kinds of things. Like I said, Raymond's is, you know, the bottles and the barrels. And the one I'm doing now is American flags, because that one was finished in brown leather. And I'm doing this one with a gray background so I can finish it in black leather. So he has a belt for each, you know, mm-hmm. each whatever he's wearing. So, I mean, I have seen geometric, you know, like some plaids and stuff like that. But a lot of times it's more personalized, like, you know, hunting dogs or you know, fishing lures or flags, you know, like that spell out, you know, nautical flags that spell out something, you know. I would say they're pretty personalized.
And you do them in wool? Sorry, Christy.
Yes. No, I was going to say that's kind of, I think, the up here how men would wear ties, right? That's probably the only thing.
Yeah, yeah. You know. I mean, I can see that. Oh, and another big thing is like the sunglass straps. You know, that's another big needlepoint thing for the younger crowd. So once again, it's a personalized thing and something usually like shotgun shells or hunting dogs and I'm trying to think. Oh, the other thing is schools, like, you know. Like, there's tons of Alabama belts down here, and my husband's an Auburn fan, so his next want is the Auburn belt. So a lot of times it's your college or university emblem.
It's always Alabama or Auburn with you guys. Always.
Oh, yeah. We're a house divided. And that's kind of brings me to another thing with needlepoint. I mean, it's a bitter rivalry. I don't know if everybody understands that, but it's pretty crazy. So one of the first projects I did was an elephant and a tiger, and I had them like triple matted and framed. So they're quite large. They're close to probably foot and a half, 2 feet, you know, square. And they're on top, the ones hanging on top of the other one. And each year at the Iron Bowl, whoever wins gets moved to the top. So for the first time since they've been hung, Auburn's moving to the top this year, but we have yet to have the ceremony. We're waiting to a good time so I can tape the ceremony for him.
Of course there's a ceremony. Of course there is.
There's a ceremony, and I'm like, well, you better enjoy it because you're going back down next year. So, yeah, it can get crazy.
It's fascinating to me because I have there's two ladies I work with, and it's Alabama and Auburn, and it's a rare one for each. And it's a rare conversation that if we talk about something other than business, that one of the other schools doesn't come up, and people are identified by one school or the other, it seems off. You know, oh, that's an Auburn person. You know, it's holy smokes,
you're
folks.
You supposedly declare at birth. And that is not a joke. I mean, it can get pretty heated. And so we're a mixed marriage, and it makes, you know, there's time when we first got married, we couldn't watch the Iron Bowl together, but now we've both kind of married a little bit. But
you've grown up.
We've grown up a little. I think that, you know, the two of each other's kind of cut it down on the other side, but he told me he didn't want to watch it with me this year, but I insisted. I mean, we're at the coast, so I'm like, where do you think we're going to go? So, yeah, but it's not too, it makes it fun at least. Sometimes not so much fun.
Yeah. No, first time I was in Birmingham meeting with a company, first time I'd ever been with this company, and we weren't into the meeting 15 minutes, and it became an Auburn, Alabama discussion. And I just kind of sat there at the end of the table going, what is going on? This is it's a different world. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very different world. So, yeah. So that makes sense why you could see a lot of times that the collegiate part of it can end up on a belt. And, you know, and that's kind of just another Southern thing. I mean, it's not just Alabama and Auburn. You see Georgia and LSU and South Carolina, all the, like, you know, or even if it's like the Palmetto, you know, for South Carolina, just something, your state flag or just something that identifies you, which makes it fun. It makes for a great gift, you know.
Oh, sure.
For somebody that you care a lot about, because it takes a long time to do.
Yeah. I got it. Just the mechanics of it. So it's a long piece of canvas that you either paint a design on or just stitch a design. And then, and I assume done in wool because for durability.
Right.
And then
some people do it in a silk blend, but I've do all mine in wool.
Okay. And then when somebody finishes it, they put a backing on the canvas and then the belt ends. How does that get done?
Well, you know, I don't really know. I mean, the finisher takes care of that part of it. But yeah, I mean, they pretty much, you know, you have to, before you start on the belt, you have to like know the measurements, because you don't want your design cut off, or you have to know where to put the initials so that the belt with the leather part with the holes does not overlap onto your design. One, you don't want to waste stitching if you don't have to, and two, you don't want to like lose your design. And I mean, you can only take from the ends, and if that's where your initials are, what are you going to do? So there's a formula that they'll tell you to like measure from the hole that you use to the tip of this on a regular belt. And then that's how you determine your stitching area.
Oh.
Yeah.
And just like a true needle pointer, I don't know, that's the finisher's problem.
Yeah, that one's kind of over my head. I just know that from the fact that you have to have the correct, you know, space of stitching for them, the height and width.
Yeah. And then when it comes back, is there a back? There must be a backing of some kind on the canvas.
Yes, there's a backing. I mean, not quite sure what that material is, but it's kind of stuck to it, and then you have your closed in leather ends.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I've only seen them in pictures,
Oh, you need a belt. They're awesome.
Okay.
Pick your favorite thing and have one painted and designed with your, like, I don't know, something that defines you.
I don't know what that would be, Gary.
I don't know either. Because see that, yeah, that's item number one. Yeah, I don't even know what I'd want on it.
Yeah, just, you have to think about that and let me know. I'm curious now.
Okay. Well, do you know a canvas painter that, you know, could help me out?
I have not done a belt yet. I think that whole idea of the, like, having the measurements be so precise scares me a little bit. So, but yeah, I've ordered both of mine. From someone, the two I'm working on, I've ordered them both, and there's some people who are really good at builds, so I let them do that at this moment.
So that's interesting, because that was one of the main questions I wanted to ask you, was because you really kind of built your business on reaching the younger generation of stitchers, and I've had a hard time, as we've talked to different people, figuring out what it is that's attractive to young needle pointers or stitchers in general. And so based on what you're saying, it's a lot of these personalize things. And then your designs, right. A lot of them are sayings.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I like the sayings. I think they're fun. I think that's kind of part of the appeal. It's just something new and different and fun. And they kind of, you know, they're going to react to that more than they're going to react to a pot of flowers, you know? So
the classic pot of flowers.
Well, I mean, I think that's beautiful and I love that. There's nothing wrong with that, but I don't think that's going to catch a new Stitcher's eye. You know, they're going to be drawn to like a funny, fun kind of, well, yeah, something I do, just like they would say, hey, that's cute on a t-shirt. They're like, well, hey, that's cute on a needlepoint design, you know? So yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think it's just different.
It's so funny because whenever anybody wants to refer to a piece of needlepoint to demonstrate old and dodgy and worn out, it's always the pot of flowers.
But I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings on that. I've seen some very beautiful pots of flowers, but if you're not like, if you're new to needlepoint, that's probably not going to be the first thing you're going to be like, hey, that's what I want to do.
Right.
So. Right.
Oh no, yeah. I've seen some amazing stitched pots of flowers, yeah.
Oh yeah. You know, especially like, I mean, the one thing that I really want to learn next is, you know, the ribbon yes. stitches that do flowers.
Yeah, pretty.
Now, I would love to do a pot of flowers and then learn that technique. That's my next, like, I'm looking for a class that does just the ribbon, you know, designs, because I think those are so pretty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny, I was looking at them because my niece was, she's designing her prom dress and she wanted parts of it embroidered. And, you know, I was thinking just from a time perspective, to do ribbon embroidery as opposed to just surface embroidery would be so much better because you can just cover so much more ground with ribbon quickly.
Definitely.
Right.
And it makes first of all, I'm seriously impressed that she's designing her prom dress. That's pretty cool.
We come from a crafty family. So, yeah,
that's
so
awesome.
She wanted to do that. And right, so that was the first thing was I think the ribbon embroidery is the way to go because otherwise, you know, to do a prom dress, it's going to take forever to do.
Right.
You know,
oh,
unless
yeah.
it's just,
that,
you know.
Ribbon embroidery takes forever. I mean,
It is. You know, doing satin stitch for, you know, that much coverage, you know, if you were going to do a bodice of a dress, it would, you know, I said, well,
oh my gosh, I can't even imagine.
I'm happy to help you, but that's like a full-time job from now till the prom. So let's be realistic.
Exactly. I mean, like my mom, you know, did some like shadow embroidery and stuff for my little girl, you know, just on some dresses, some nice dresses. And, you know, those are just little areas on a teeny tiny little dress. And
right.
That was, took a long time. So
and
I can't imagine a full, you know, hand done full bodice would just be out of my realm.
Well, I think that's why those gowns are usually just couture gowns because, because who else is going to sit and do that? And then because, you know, that dress you'll only wear one time.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So. Well, I want to see a picture of this dress when it's finished. So you know, shoot me an email.
If she does do it, I will definitely post it up.
Please do.
No, I'm always amazed when you look at royal clothing or medieval clothing and they'll say this entire thing is hand embroidered. I just kind of look at them and go, by what army, you know?
What? I know, well, exactly. Like, did you spend your whole life doing that? I mean, because you must have.
It is an army, though.
Oh, wow.
Because a lot of those are done at the royal school, and quite frankly, there is an army. That's entire groups of people, and they're only allowed to stitch for a certain amount of time. And, you know, it's not one person at all. That's yards and yards of lace that's being made. It's undoable by a single person.
I know. Well, it's like when we went on our honeymoon, we went to Italy and we went to Murano and Burano, which, you know, is the lace capital of the world. And, you know, we went to their little museum and then into some stores. And that, I mean, it's just like amazing. Even my husband was shocked at like how much and was done and the tablecloths. And it's you just can't even imagine that people do that. I don't know. You just think, oh, a machine had to do that. But there's actually were people in there working on it. And I was just shocked. And the beauty of it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, those lace makers with those pillows with thousands of pins holding down every little gap and hole is just amazing.
I know. I bought a tablecloth when we were there, and people are crazy if they think I'm gonna put food on it. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of like, well, you know, it's that thing, and you want to use your nice china and this and that, what have you. But I have just not been brave enough to get that out of its wrapping and let anybody get near it with anything besides water. So I'm kind of like, well, why did you get it? But maybe one day I'll break it out and just throw caution to the wind and be like, we're going to use it. Just no red wine.
Yeah. No, it'll be gravy.
It'll be gravy.
Yeah.
Or grease or oil or something. And
it'll be
like,
something.
And I'll just lose my mind. So maybe it just needs to stay in the drawer as a keepsake.
Yep. Keep it in the bag.
Keep it in the bag. It is in the bag.
No, yeah, you have to do like they do here. So you have to take it out. You have to put it on the table. And then you have to cover it with a piece of clear plastic.
Exactly.
That's how it would be done in New York. That's the thing to do.
Well, I think that'd be the only way I would ever use it, because I just would not even be able to relax at all.
Yeah, it's pretty horrible. I don't recommend it.
Uh-huh.
So you needle point, you haven't been painting canvases for too long. How long did you needle point? And then what says to you, wait a minute, I got to do my own designs, and then I got to start painting them, and then I got to start selling them. How do you leap to that?
Well, you know, okay, so I've been stitching probably for about 4 years, and I would say, I guess a year ago, I just thought, hey, well, you know, let me try, because, you know, a lot of times there was just, you couldn't find things like something I'd want to do. Well, it was just not out there. It wasn't available, you know, maybe a saying or a this, or even as we get back to that personalized thing, what if I wanted to do a monogram or, you know, something with our name on it. And I kind of just kind of dibble dabbled with it a year or so ago and kind of, you know, tried to figure out which paints, you know, at first it was a total nightmare. I mean, it just didn't work. I mean, I didn't know what paints to use. And I'm like, how in the world do these people get it so even looking? You know, it looks like I did it with watercolor. I mean, it was just, that took some time. And I finally kind of got the paint part of it down. And I guess like earlier spring, I don't know, maybe it was February, because it was a Valentine canvas I painted for myself. It was a B mine and it had the hearts in the background. And, well, everybody, you know, knows Needlepoint Nation, and so I do your work in progress, and I put it on there one day, and I was kind of really surprised at the feedback I got, because they wanted to know who the designer was, and this and that, and I'm kind of like, me? And, you know, I didn't think much about it, and so I started getting these requests, well, can you paint one for me? And I'm like, well, I guess I can. So, you know, I painted several of those, and that's kind of how it started. And but I will have to tell you, I ended up painting 14 of them, of the same thing,
of the same one.
Yes. And I am like, oh god, no. I'm not, because I mean, it would take, because being new at it, I mean it still takes a while, don't get me wrong, but I was really slow. And literally for 2 months at least, all I did was paint those canvases. I didn't stitch. I didn't do anything. And I'm like, this is awful. And I was so bored. If I had to like paint another heart or see B mine one more time, I was just going to cry. And I'm like, well, this is not fun. There's nothing fun about this. I mean, you know, I was like, okay, this is a good way to make a little money to feed my habit. But I can't have a habit because all I'm doing is painting. And that's when, you know, that had kind of gotten out there and people were asking and posting, and, a good friend of mine that owns the store in Montgomery, she called me and she's like, okay, if you're going to do this, let's do it the right way. And, so that's kind of, got into the business part of it. She became my distributor, and that way I can be creative and I can paint, you know, one time, one thing that I like, and I just have to paint the one and I can move on to something else. And, you know, she handles the whole business side of it. So I get the best of both worlds there. I get to design, I get to be creative, I get to paint, but I only have to do it once, and then I send it off and I'm done. You know, that's all I do. And then I can stitch too. So it leaves me, it affords me time to stitch and paint.
So that's pretty much the secret then of blending all of those things together.
Yeah, because there was no way I was going to do that, just painting the same thing over and over. And it literally consumed me for a while because, you know, I'm like excited and I'm like, oh, people want this canvas. And so, you know, I said, yes, 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 yes. And then, you know, about after the 8th yes of painting the same thing, I'm like, what did you do? And, you know, so I felt I needed to get them out so I would not stop until they were all done. And I was so burned out at that point, and I had not picked up a needle in 2 months. And so I was very thankful for when Lee, you know, made that call and was like, hey, let's put our heads together. Let's talk about this. And, you know, it's kind of just been that started it, and it's just been on a roll ever since. And I've really enjoyed it.
So your design, when it's sent out, are they all hand-painted, or do you have a machine painter? All hand-painted?
Yeah, they're all hand-painted. You know, I don't know all the logistics in that, but yes, they are all hand-painted. So any of my canvases you get, they're hand-painted, just not by me. The first one's painted by me, and the copies are painted by someone else.
And is it, they're stitch-painted, so they match right up?
Yes. I mean, I try to stick... For the most part, all of my stuff is stitch painted. Now, on some of the different things, you know, there's some shading a little bit that wouldn't be exactly stitch painted, I guess. But it's more for kind of the look. And then, of course, you can do over dyed threads or variegated, whatever. That'll pull that in. But that allows you to see it with your eye before, you know. But that's the only time I would say it's not exactly stitch painted.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. This whole thing fascinates me because I think everybody who does needlepoint at one time or another thinks, wait a minute, I have an idea for a design and I can hold a paintbrush, so I should just paint my own design. And I don't know how many people ever do, but you see a Needlepoint Nation, there was one just the other day. What paints do you use? And, you know, I could tell there's somebody else who wants to give this a try and see how it works out. And because it's a natural, you know, it's a natural extension of the needle pointing is.
Oh, I've got
definitely. You know, yeah. And you dove right in and we use acrylic paint for yours.
Yes. Acrylic paint, nothing fancy. You know, I just get the $1.49 things at Hobby Lobby. And, you know, some are better than others and you'll get a bad bottle that you just have to throw away sometimes. But you just kind of. Well, in the different things that you're painting, you know, you're going to want just different consistencies if you're trying to do a real straight line or if you're trying to do something a little more curvy. It's things that you just kind of learn. And I'm still to this day when I'm painting different things. I learn different techniques with myself where I need to maybe water this down a little bit more. And I can tell a whole lot of difference in, like, my first canvas, say, like 8 months ago. Till now, I've learned over time on what to do and what not to do, and I do believe like the stitch painting's gotten better, just because you just get a feel for it.
Yeah.
But I've seen some people they'll try it themselves and they'll be like, okay, I'll never complain again when I pay for a hand painted canvas and I can get that, and you know, and there's some that are so, you know, mine are pretty simple and. Pretty straightforward a lot of the times. There are some that are just so intricate and like a, you know, basically a piece of art you would hang on your wall, stitched or not stitched, and yet they've still stitch painted them. And to me, I mean, that's just a true talent. I mean, I'm nowhere anywhere can touch any of that, but doing it, I can just like look at it now and admire it so much more just because I have done it. And yes, I'd love to be that one day. I don't see it happening, but it's that same thing you said about the stockings. Until you attempt it, you're not real impressed, but hey, they've got 20 stockings. But that first stocking will change your mind real quick.
It sure will. Yeah. Well, that's the thing with, because you hear that all the time. All these painted canvases are so expensive, but even something like Be Mine with a couple of hearts on it. You know, sit down and just try and draw that out. And then on an uneven surface with holes all over the place, try and get that to lines to be clean and fit at the exact hole. And yeah, after a while, you add up the hours and see how much goes into it. And then
right. trying to even think of it, right, if you think of it in terms of, you know, what's an hourly wage? What do you, you know, what's a fair wage for what you've done? Aside from the art, you know, if you're paying for a piece of art, you put that aside because that's evaluated completely differently. This, just the amount of hours that you put into it, if you divide it up, that's why, you know, a lot of them are so expensive, because you have to pay someone a living wage to be able to do them. Right.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, we all have our different things that we do. And well, you know, Abby, it's kind of the thing that you old adage you've always heard is like, find something you love to do and figure out a way to make a living at it. Well, by no means am I putting bread on our table, but it's helping, like, it helps support my habit, and that keeps my husband happy. So, but yeah, like these people that, I mean, literally, you know, that are just amazing, and they've got like just oogoodles of canvases. I mean, you're right. You have to pay somebody to do that. I mean, why would they do it otherwise? I mean, they're taking hours out of their life to do it. And well, like anything else you pay for, you're going to have to pay for that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. And, you know, and I think about it, the way you describe your business model, everyone involved needs a cut of the cost. And
right.
And, yeah. So, it starts to add up in a hurry. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it does. Most definitely. So it's an interesting world.
What inspires the designs?
All kinds of things. I find inspiration everywhere. You know, I mean, obviously I have a lot of sayings, so you can find those just about anywhere. Coffee mugs, t-shirts, you know, just little printed signs in a store. And even at this point now, I have like Stitchers sending me messages with ideas. Oh, I saw this sign, and this would make it cute, this and that. So, I mean, that's kind of been fun too. You know, having people be like, oh, I'd love to see this. And I'm like, okay. So, like, one of my favorites that I just painted up for this part a couple of months ago was somebody had posted on Needlepoint Nation. I'm like, I'd love to see this, you know, any takers. And actually somebody tagged me because they've seen me, and it was, oh gosh, what was it? It's what is it? Jingle Bells, Zinfandels, Past the Cabernet.
Yeah.
And I mean, and so I was just like, when they saw that, I was like, yes, I've got to do that one. And so I did. And from feedback, it's been one of my more popular ones. And that was just from somebody posting it, you know, hey, this would make a cute canvas. And well, there you go.
the thing I like about your designs, and I do struggle with, for instance, the pot of flowers, where all I can see is just basket weave in order to bring out the detail. And that's
right.
Designs like yours, there's some space to do different stitches. Like the words are, the lettering is fat enough, and it has fat enough in that there's enough space that you can actually develop some stitches. And
right. And it has a pretty open background too. Like, you know, a lot of like area that you can do some open stitches and stuff as well. That makes them kind of move on along.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that is one of the things that may appeal to younger stitchers. I was talking to the store owner in Birmingham, and what she has noticed from the younger stitchers, I mean, you know, this is an instant gratification generation. And so they like quick, let me stitch it, let me get it done, let me get it back. And some of those more intricate, detailed backgrounds, this and that, well, they're just not going to move like that. But some of mine, you can like throw out there pretty quickly, because you can do an open stitch on the background, you can do the satin stitches on the words, you can do a tent stitch on the circles, and you can have it done in a week. And I think that's one thing that appeals to the younger people. I mean, I love the intricate detailed ones, and they're beautiful, and but they take time. I mean, that's, and none of mine are really that complicated.
Do you set a goal? Do you try and do two or three designs a month, or you just let them happen as they come to you?
I let them happen as they come to me. I mean, you know, one thing, well, two things. One, I'm a stitcher first, so I like to stitch. So I try to pace myself. So, but I've now cut to the, I paint during the day and I stitch at night. That's my new, how I drew a line that I get a little bit done. But I'm also a mom of a 4-year-old who actually has special needs. And so she's in school. She's at a school where she did stellar therapy and stuff, but we have lots of doctor's appointments and, you know, different stuff going on. So really, I just have to base it on what my life is, what's happening then, or the holidays or something. I try not to let it stress me out too much. I just let it happen when it happens. But my first job is the mom. So we do that. And then when I have time left over, I do this.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's how it goes.
Yep. Yeah. So you have an area in the house where you can work?
The kitchen table.
Yeah, where have you taken over is really the question.
The kitchen table. Well, that way, because it's still kind of in the middle of the house. And then if Elizabeth's there, she's kind of in the den back behind me. And so, you know, I'm still in the main part of the house kind of, and I can paint. And there's good lighting in our, like, the eating area off our kitchen, which is the kitchen table. And so I paint there. Now, granted, the table's ruined now because there's paint splattered all over it.
Because you didn't do the plastic over it, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, sometimes you just don't have time for that. So, the table's kind of splitter splattered at this point, and there's no point in getting a new one because it would just get splitter splattered too. And so, yeah, the kitchen table is where I work, and I kind of try to keep it, you know, like my paint's all in a box, and I'm pretty OCD, so then everything's pretty organized, and I can stack it all up and put it in a closet. So, you know, I can get rid of it really quickly. And, but sometimes it'll be out there for a week or so, and I'm just like, don't touch it, don't move it, and don't get food on it. So.
but it's the kitchen table. Yeah, well,
it's
leave it alone.
It's the kitchen table. You know, my husband has an office here at the house, and it's not used for work, but that's where he does, you know, I mentioned his models earlier. We basically moved houses because I insisted he get all that mess off the kitchen table and he needed his own room. Well, he's taken that room over. So I kind of asked him, I'm like, you think you could share it with me? You know, can I have my little spot in this room too? And he's just too messy. He would never keep it like clean enough for me to have a spot. So I guess the kitchen table it is.
Men, you know,
I know. And he likes to work on the floor. So he literally has it spread out all over the floor, and I don't know how he keeps any of it straight, but he does. And so, but that's his room, and I'm in the kitchen. It works.
This is quite a scene.
Yeah, but remember, he told me to get a hobby, so here I am.
No, that's what's going through my head through this entire thing. Here is yep, he started it.
He started it. So now, you know, and I'm just kidding. He really is quite supportive. I mean, he's been really good about it, and he's excited, and he knows way more about stitching than I think he ever thought he would in his life. So
yeah, that happens to spouses. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I've heard. So my wife doesn't give a rip about stitching, but she probably knows a whole lot more about it than she'd care to admit.
Yep. He would be the same way. Well, I mean, I could admit, though, I know a lot more about your, you know, German tanks than I ever thought I would know as well. So.
Well, it's because that's what they're excited about. So that's what they want to talk about, right? And then we do the same thing.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's great. I mean, does he love it like I do? No, but, you know, he's excited when I'm excited, and I'm excited when he's excited. And it's the same thing. When he finishes a project, he's thrilled, and the same goes for me. And we just share in that.
So does needlepoint go with you everywhere?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You're normal.
Yes. Yes, I'm very normal. You know, what I tell people is, you know, if you needlepoint, you're never bored, because you can be sitting at a doctor's office, you can be in a car, you can be on a plane, you can be like, your flight's been delayed. As long as I have my needlepoint, I can handle that, you know. And you can only scroll through Facebook so much. So you need to have, and so, yeah, I don't go anywhere without a small project in my hands. And, you know, and I've tried to tell that to friends, because, like, the latest thing I guess you'd say I've been doing is I've started teaching beginner needlepoint classes. And because I'm trying to, once again, you know, it goes back to that, hey, I want to keep this going. I don't want this to, you know, be a lost art. And so I've tried to, you know, some of my friends have started to see what I'm doing, and, you know, it piques their interest a bit, and they're like, well, well, tell me a little bit about it. And there's been several that are like, okay. And so they've taken the classes, and a few of them, just like me, the bug has bit them, and, you know, they're loving it. And so, and I explain the same thing to them. I'm like, just always have a project with you, and I promise you, you'll never get bored, ever. And so it's been fun to kind of spread the love a little bit.
Yeah.
And plus, you have a family, right? You've got your own tribe there.
Yes.
That are joining you, which is also nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's so fun to be able to, you know, just randomly text one of them, hey, so what you working on? How's your project going? Especially the ones that I've, you know, taught these classes to. I kind of want to see how's it going, and I've always told them, feel free, call me, text me, you know, FaceTime me, whatever, if you need some help. And, you know, they'll send me pictures of what they're working on, and I see their excitement, and it just, I don't know, it makes my heart smile.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the huge pluses of the technology we have today, is just that, to be able to share and get help at any time. Nobody has to get in a car and drive. You can, you know, FaceTime and show me this. And yeah, you have a finish something, you can share it with people.
Exactly.
That's just one of the neat things.
It's
fun. Yeah. Well, that's what I enjoy at Needlepoint Nation about the Sunday thread, where everybody shows what they're working on. It's so much fun to just follow that.
Oh, mm-hmm. I love it. And, you know, I mean, and then for, I guess, designers like me, I mean, my goodness, the form of advertising that you can do now. I mean, like Instagram and Facebook and even Needlepoint Nation, your weekly ads or what have you. I mean, if you had to pay for like print advertisement, what you get from those, I mean, there's just no way new designers like me could do that. I mean, I just can't fork out the money for, you know, print advertising. And it opens up a whole new world, you know, for you to show your work to, and it doesn't cost you anything. And I think it's great, because goodness knows what I have purchased from what I have seen on Instagram or Needlepoint Nation. I mean, it's just like a drug, and they just put it out there in front of you for the taking. And it's like, when she says hide your credit cards, she is not kidding.
Nope.
Nope. It's dangerous.
Well, yeah, it is. And that's just it. I sit there and you go through that stuff. Oh, I want that one and I want that one. And the little voice in the back of the head is, what about that pile over there on the table?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, yes. The stash closet. It's embarrassing.
Yeah. 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 What about stitching some of that? What's wrong with that? Well, yeah, but this here is really extra.
Yes, this one's just perfect. I know exactly what I can do with this.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awful. It's awful, but it's so much fun.
So where's the stitching place in the house? Wherever you sit?
Yeah, I'm pretty good at taking it wherever I am. I have a chair in our bedroom that I love to stitch in, because it's comfy, and I have like my floor lamp, and, you know, I have my lap stand, and I can get the TVs in here, and I can snuggle up in that, and just, you know, that's my favorite place to stitch. But I can really do it anywhere, you know, on the couch, watching TV with the family, in the bed, you know, sitting at the kitchen table, you know, just wherever. But if you gave me a choice, I'd like to be in my chair.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Lap stand. Christine's looking for a lap stand. What do you have?
I have the system for a lap stand.
Yeah.
I like it because it's good and heavy. And because I don't like sit, you know, like straight up in a hard chair, you know, I'm literally like lounged back in a big old chair and a half. It like bounces on my lap. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's heavy enough that it stays where you want it. And that's why I like, you know, some people might complain about the weight, but it's perfect for me because I can be sitting with my, you know, my knees curled up under me and it's in my lap. And it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah. I think I would prefer that too. That's the one sort of worry that I've had about lap stands, is that they're not going to be stable enough, but that's exactly what I need it to do.
Yeah. I love it for that reason. I mean, even when, cause you know, I have the table clamp, and I have the floor stand and the system for, and like when I've gone to classes and stuff, I'm like, oh, the table clamp will be perfect, because you do have the table and you're more in a standard chair. But it kills my back. So I just still take my lap stand and put my feet up on my little stool, and it just sits perfectly in my lap. So even though I've got the other stuff, I always go back to that lap stand. It's my favorite.
That's interesting that you don't use a floor stand unless you have to.
Huh. Yeah. I mean, well, it's not as portable either. I mean, it's great. It's sitting, I have a big old leather chair, not like a recliner or anything, in the den, and that's where it sits. And I guess if I'm sitting in that chair, I'll put it in that. But otherwise, I get pulled out from under the chair and then haul it back to the bedroom or wherever, and I end up hitting the wall and chipping paint. And so the lap stand is a heck of a lot more portable. And I can basically just yank it and take it with me. Just pick it up. Let's go. And same thing when I travel. I just fold it down and throw it in the bag. And there's a lot more folding. And I don't know. Some people have to have their floor stands. But, to each their own. Lap stand works great for me.
Well, Christine, that sounds like you sitting on a couch there all curled up. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's me. I don't sit in any particular way. I'm usually curled up. I don't like sitting at a, straight. I'm usually, it's not like I'm reading a book, basically. Yeah, I'm it's my little book right in front of me. So.
Okay, well, we're helping Christine spend money, so.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. And that's the other thing that I tell, my friends when they get started. I'm like, you'll never lack for, Christmas birthday ideas anymore. You're going to have a list a mile long. I want this, I want that, the stand or the light or the bags. I mean, you can run the gamut from real expensive to not expensive, but you will always have a list.
It's true.
Yep.
It is.
All right. Well, I direct the handbell choir at church. And last year, a complete surprise to me, they gave me a gift certificate to my local needlework store. That was so much fun. I mean, I was really surprised, number one, to get it, really appreciative. But then to go it's not my money. I can just, I kitted up 2.5 projects. I was like, oh, yes.
Oh, yes. I'm telling you, it's like a drug fix. It's just awesome when you get to go and it's not your money. Those are the best gifts. Those are fun. Well, that was awfully sweet.
Oh, yeah. It was terrific. Yeah. And I still remember going to the store that day and just, I walked out with a nice little bag full of stuff. It was great.
Yeah, like a kid in a candy store.
That's right. That's right. Yep. Yep. Do any other kind of stitching?
Nope. That's it. Needlepoint.
Okay.
Yeah. Goodness gracious, I don't need another hobby. I need to stick with one.
Go ahead and try some Hardanger. See how you like it.
Oh, boy.
Oh, gosh. I'd probably like it. But, like I said, I have enough projects to last me till the day I die. I sure don't need to pick up some more.
Now, do you stitch everything that you design?
Oh, gosh, no. At this point, I probably have between 150 and 200 designs. So,
oh my,
there's no way, even if I wanted to, but there's, I pick my favorites, because also, you try to have some, models for when you go to markets and stuff. So you want to do it, one, for that reason. And two, I design what I like. I mean, that's what got me started in the first place, is I wanted things I couldn't find readily available to me. And so I picked my favorites, and I've got a couple I'm working on right now. So I kind of put those in with my other projects and always keep at least one of mine going, so that I can, one, have a model, and two, just have something I like.
Yeah. Other than you, who's your favorite designer? Do you have a favorite?
Well, I do have to say that I love Pepperberry. Her little cottages, I've on my seventh one. And so they are just so much fun. I have them framed, and they're holiday, I don't know if you've seen them, but they're usually a holiday themed. And so I have a little stand that I rotate them out with the holidays. Mm. And so I love her stuff. It's cute. It's whimsical. It's the kind of stuff I like. And she was probably that person that really made me want to stitch a lot more, were a lot of her designs and those cottages. Cause it was on the cover of Needlepoint Nation. The Christmas one was, it was probably the first Needlepoint Nation magazine that Needlepoint? Yeah. And,
Needlepoint Now, you mean?
Yes, that's it. I was like, I know that's not right. It was the first one of the magazines I had, and that Christmas Cottage was on the cover, and I just fell in love. So it was the first one I bought, and well, obviously, like I said, I'm on my seventh now, and they're just my favorite. So I'd probably say she's my favorite.
Now I have to look that up. I don't know Pepperberry, huh?
Pepperberry Designs, yes. Okay. So she has those cottages. I'm trying to think. She does. She has a lot of little snowmen. And actually, right now in the this month's Needlepoint Nail, she did the little 3D gingerbread that's in there. That's hers too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I noticed that. All right.
Yeah, that's her. She has a lot of cute, fun stuff. And did you ever see one of my other favorite things? And I just ordered this one. It's in my. I've got to do it. Is that USA that somebody stitched and they put them on these little pedestals?
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yes.
Okay, that's her too.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I've seen her work. I just didn't realize who it was. Okay.
Yes. So I like her a lot.
I'm learning that Christmas and the 4th of July are two times when it comes to Needlepoint that I'm really coming to enjoy, because it's so much fun to see what people do for finishing.
Oh, yeah. It's getting so creative.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Like, I have one that I've got to go pick up that it'd be like, I get to Birmingham to get it. I did these three Santa faces, and, you know, I couldn't figure out what to really do, so we talked about it. And I'm like, I kind of want it on a North Pole, like something. So they finished them, like, as hangers or squares. They're probably about 5-inch squares. And they've got it on a North Pole pole on top of a Santa's litter box. I mean, it's about 4 feet tall. And I'm like, I can't get to Birmingham in time to get it. It's going to be like New Year's and I'll have to put it up. So I'm like, I got to get up there. But that's the thing. I mean, like, there's just an endless. And that's the other thing about the online and stuff. So many ideas you get.
Yes.
And it's just, I don't know. You can just do so much. I get excited about it. I'm sorry.
No, it really is amazing what people do. And the 4th of July, you'd think, oh, yeah, it's just one day and it comes and it goes. But what people do with red, white, and blue, and you know, things on sticks and three-dimensional things, it's just amazing. And
And Halloween, too.
There's another one,
Halloween kind of lends itself.
That's when I pick a project. I mean, the way I've now kind of narrowed down when I get stuff, because I could just be in so much trouble, is I try to have an idea in my head of exactly what I'm going to do with it. And so that's, if I don't, I don't get it. I mean, that's my deciding factor.
The finishers, I mean, there's so many good ones. And sometimes you think they're just trying to one up each other all the time.
That's a good thing for all of us.
Oh yeah.
Now I have to tell you though, my next thing that I'm going to try is I'm going to try to finish some of my ornaments. Now it might be a complete failure, but we're going to try it. So I'm going to try to be able to like take it from the beginning to the very end.
Yep.
Yeah. You've got nothing to lose. It's just an ornament, you know? So if it doesn't come out perfect,
yeah, exactly.
It's the worst that can happen.
I know. And if it's one of mine, you know, who cares? So
it's on a tree among many.
Yeah.
So, well, I have to say, I just in this past week bought a sewing machine. And the reason I bought it is because I really just feel bad about asking friends to come over who have sewing machines to edge cloth for me or canvas or whatever it might be. Uh-huh. And, you know, I just always feel like I'm really imposing on them. And there's a lot of times when I just want to get started on something, but I have to wait because I want it edged.
Right.
And so I bought one, but in the back of my mind was that very same thing. I want to start learning how to finish things. So I've only had it for like a week. And just a couple days ago, I just took some muslin and made a little bag. You know, just sewed a bag and turned it inside out. And it was like, wow, I can do this. This is pretty neat. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's exciting.
Yeah.
You'll be amazed at what you'll be able to do in, you know, just 6 months. So,
right. Yeah. No, I'll use the Vonna Pfeiffer techniques because that's just it. Yeah. You can use your own stitching Mm-hmm. And do it. And if it's not so good, ask, so what? You know, it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm very lucky. My mother is, she sews well and she's kind of perfectionist. So when I start this whole trying to finishing stuff thing, she'll probably end up doing a lot of it just because she can teach me a lot. So at least I have a built in, you know, tutor to kind of help me with just the typical, well, you need to know to this, you need to know that. And so
I can see it now. Amy, give me that thing. It's taking you forever.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're exactly right. She's like, just give it to me. And I'll be like, so gladly.
I think there's with sewing machine, there's a couple of little like techniques that you'll learn. Like once you learn straight line, you're pretty good with, you know, most of the things. Going around curves, when you learn how to clip curves, that will help you tremendously. When you learn how to do points and get them perfect, that will help you. And there's just little tricks to doing those things. And we can actually have a whole conversation about that, because that's probably the one thing that I do know because I've spent, you know, I don't even know how many hours on a sewing machine. Many. Certainly more hours doing that than any other kind of stitchery of any kind. But the other thing that's useful is when you're trying to figure out, you know, how to do something, look at how something else is constructed, unless it's, you know, a pillow or something like that where you can't see the inside of it. Right. A shirt, whatever it is, a lot of times you can see sort of how something is, or if you can't see it, you can feel it. So you can look for where the seams are and kind of get an idea of how things are put together. And then that will start getting you thinking about how things are constructed as far as finishing. But really it does come down to, I think the hardest things are curves and getting points neat. And then I think the other thing with finishing that I would think would be the next tricky thing would be getting piping done. Right. And that's just really, and Gary, you will get very good at this very quickly because you're very fastidious about things. And that's really just technique. It's just practice about holding the fabric the right way and holding it, making sure that you're not sloppy. And then once you get that down, you're pretty much good to go, right? There's not a lot of, you're basically, you know, most sewing machines now have, you know, 8 million settings and you can do, you know, all these different fancy stitches. And I can tell you on mine, I use forward and I use zigzag and I use backstitch, and that's pretty much, oh, and buttonhole, right? Because I make things that have buttons in them. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it. Like, you really can pretty much do anything that we would do now with an old fashioned Singer sewing machine that your great grandmother had.
Right. So, I think they've almost gotten, you know, sometimes they're just too smart for their own good. Like, my mom she just wants a standard sewing machine. I mean, she grew up sewing. My grandmother sewed. She made my mother's wedding dress and the 14 bridesmaids. And, you know, my mom has made my daughter's, like, christening gown. That's when that hand embroidery came into play. Now, I can't do any of that mess. But, I mean, the thing is, she'll tell you, you don't need all that complicated stuff. You just need the basic. And once you get those basic things down, you're exactly right. You can make anything. It's just how much patience and time do you have to get to that point? Yeah. I don't have the patience to sew. I just don't. And I don't know. The same thing it comes down to, she's a baker and I'm a cook. And because a baker has to have everything like precise, the flour has to be leveled off, you know, and a baker is a little this and a little that. And I mean, a cook, you know, when you cook, and that's kind of me, and we'll do a little bit more salt, a little bit more this. And like, that just makes her a nervous wreck when I do that. But, you know, with baking, you can't do that. And I kind of look at sewing and stitching the same way. Sewing has to be very precise.
You're right.
And stitching, you can kind of, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. You can just change it up, and it really shows our personalities quite well.
I think you're right, and that's why I think, Gary, you will get good at this quickly, because really the key to doing it well is just attention to detail and being meticulous about things. You know, it's very easy to do it sloppily and to get things messed up. The other thing is once you master the art of the thread tension, you're golden, because that's probably the only thing that will frustrate you at the beginning is if you don't have your thread tension and everything kind of gets all messed up underneath. Once you figure that out and how to adjust it, then you'll be fine. That's probably the only frustrating thing.
Well, that's exciting.
I think so too.
Yeah, I love that.
It opens up so much.
Yeah, you're going to be getting some calls, Christine.
Absolutely. I'd love to. So, I mean, I did, well, last year, 2 years ago, I did a middle school play, and I think I did 28 costumes for that. Jeez. So my living room was like a sweatshop, pretty much. Wow. So
that is so impressive. But I just,
It was... It really was, no, it was just, and that was just cranking out, you know, stuff because only, well, and they were all, actually none of them were from patterns either. They were all just sort of designed.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, they kind of had to, they kind of had to come out of my brain because they didn't exist, right? Otherwise they would be in a costume shop that they could have been rented from. So, yeah, that was a lot of work. That was many months.
You gotta love it, that's for sure.
It was, yeah, and I think that's the thing too. You know, you're talking about sewing being very frustrating and you hate it, and I think it's just whatever people like to do. You know, my grandmother sewed all the time. She sewed all our clothes when we were little, the same way as your mom, and that was just what she did. And I don't remember her picking up needlepoint except for maybe once in a while just to teach something. But she was on that machine all the time. And so as I was growing up, you know, even through college, I was making clothing. I made my sister's prom dress. Like, this is, you know, that's what I did because I liked it. And, it's just whatever you happen to like.
Yeah, I mean, you're always going to do things you like. I mean, because that's the whole thing. I mean, you want to do it for enjoyment. So why sit there and, you know, make yourself do something you don't like?
Right.
Just because you feel you need to. But that's pretty impressive. Yeah, you'll be whipping out your own stocking finishings before we know it, Gary.
I'll just be happy to get an ornament that looks like it should be hung somewhere. That's
it will all. Be fine.
That's all I want. Just it one ornament. Because this machine has 100 stitches. Like, seriously,
just ignore all of them.
Well,
all you need is the first one.
Well, that was just it. I looked at all those. What am I going to use all this stuff for? Forget all that.
Nothing. Yeah. The answer is nothing. So yeah, those are actually good for machine embroidery. So there's all of this, you know, that's something we've never talked about is machine embroidery, and there's tons and tons of things, and that's a whole other skill set. So you could do a lot of things with that, but for what you are doing, which is constructing something, you need to go forwards and backwards, and you need to make a zigzag. That's pretty much it. So you will use two settings, which is actually the zigzag, you'll adjust, you know, maybe the width and the length of the stitches, and that's pretty much it. There you go. That's all there is to it.
Well, so far, that's exactly what I've used.
And if it doesn't work, there's always hot glue.
Oh, great. Yeah. When in doubt, hot glue it. Okay.
Well, there's always a fallback. That's probably the way I'm going to do it is, you know, like some glue and some stitching. If I probably tried to use a machine to do it, yeah, there's no telling how it would turn out. So
it's one of those things. I think you just have to try and just practice. But I think that with this, that it's like, so needlepoint, I think it's not that difficult to teach yourself. And with the sewing machine, with constructing a garment, it might be better to have somebody show you a few things at the beginning. And actually, Gary, what I would recommend is getting a pattern for something and having somebody walk you through reading a pattern. Once you know how to do that, then sew a couple of things from patterns, like simple things like pillows or stockings or what, you know, whatever, just things like household items, just stuff so that you get used to things. And that in doing that, you will sort of hit on all the tricks and like the trouble spots, and you will learn everything you need to know. And that will be where you get to points where you say, oh, I don't know what to do. And then you'll text me a photo of what do I do? And then you know, and then you can walk through those things. But patterns, if you can learn how to read a pattern, then it's just like anything else. It's like a good chart. You really are just following instructions. And as long as you follow the instructions to the letter, you cannot go wrong. They really are that. There's no subjectivity to them at all. It is just do it exactly the way the pattern is telling you to do it. And that's it.
Okay. All right. All right.
Just jump in. Yeah. Just jump in.
Yeah. Well, I already did that, so just
all right.
We'll see. All right, Amy, when we started, I told you we were just going to yak about stitching for an hour, and an hour and 11 minutes later.
I think it's awesome. Yep. I think it's awesome. This has been so much fun.
Yep. There you have it right there. And, you know, you over an hour, so that means you have to come back. That means we have more things to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to. I'm not going to lie. I was a bit nervous about this whole concept. but, you know, I actually really enjoyed it. And I would be more than happy to come back and talk with y'all again. It's been a lot of fun.
You're on the list. All right. We're going to wrap this thing up. That's it, folks. Thanks for listening. Amy, thanks for joining us. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me.
Yep. Christina and I will be back on Wednesday.
Take care.